Talks Experimental.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff. The final liftoff of Atlantis on the shoulders of the space shuttle. America will continue the dream.
All right, welcome to TJ Talks. I am Judd.
And I'm Teresa.
And we're back after 6 flipping months of being gone. Has it been 6 months? I think it's been about 6 months.
I think it's even longer.
Don't say that.
I know. Sorry, everybody out there in podcast land, but we're back.
And committed.
Right, like, we actually have it on our schedule.
Not like straitjacket committed, but we're like... You know, we have it on our schedule. So every 2 weeks, we're going to do a podcast by hell or high water. And so, you know, we have 100 podcasts out there, and at least we didn't bore you by just trying to repost podcasts that have already been played.
Yeah, that was our strategy to, you know, not bore anybody. We just took some time off. And you know what? I listen to a lot of podcasts, and people do hiatuses and then they come back. So, you know, we're entitled.
Absolutely. So we have kind of refreshed, and we have good new information material to do. So it'll be good.
Absolutely. And today will be a fun kind of get to know each other again day. And then subsequent shows, we're going to have some different segments, and we're going to maybe do some interviews and things like that. So we're going to expand our podcast horizons.
Even potentially special guest stars, right?
Dun, dun, dun. Sounds exciting. I can't wait.
I know.
I'm so excited to see what we're going to do.
You know, when I was home on vacation a couple weeks ago, there were some people who expressed some interest that wanted to be on the podcast.
And I think they know who they are, so they're going to be contacted, correct?
They will be contacted. I don't know if they're listening, but they will be after we tell them.
Nobody's listening, Jed. That's why we do this show.
Right. So when someone wants to do research on one of us, they have to listen to over 100 hours of podcasts.
Right.
I want to know who's the guy in the government who has to sit and transcribe our podcast. And how much do we have to pay to get a copy of that? Is that a Freedom of Information Act thing?
Has to be, because it's all in the Library of Congress, right?
I think it's just, you know, when they go do somebody's clearance.
So the NSA is probably listening to us right now.
Absolutely.
All right.
They in fact, probably have our show ready to go before I even put it together.
Well, we're probably on a watch list because we could be guilty of radicalizing, you know, 40-year-olds.
No. The only thing we would be radicalizing is the Pokemon Go fever.
Oh, what? This Pokemon
Can
Go.
Can you explain that to me? I have not downloaded this app on my phone, and all of a sudden I was out with somebody this weekend, and I had a runner's event, and she was a guest at this thing, and she said, I have to kind of go over here because there's a Pokemon I got to get.
Yep.
I'm like, fuck. Whatever.
And these are grown
I'm done.
Up, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. She's like 41 years old going out to get Pokemons.
Yeah. So the kids are kind of into it here. And yeah. I know what it is because a son of mine has it on his phone. And as we were driving around today, he's like, oh, there's a Pokemon. And he clicked something and got it. He claims it's fun and it's the silly distraction. Also that it sucks the hell out of your battery. So I don't know if that just happens to be his experience or if it's always running in the background, so it's always creating this battery suck on your phone. I get that it's kind of fun, but I can imagine people are going to kill themselves driving and looking for Pokemon because the map on the phone is not, you know, people are going to get distracted.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine all the horrible places that you'll have to go to get the super Pokemons or whatever.
Well, here's what I would do if I owned a business.
Yeah.
I would, and I guess there are Pokestops.
Is there?
There are landmarks or special places where you can go, like Grinder Haven here in Ontario is a Pokestop.
Okay.
So you go there and you're for sure going to get Pokemon. Now, if I owned a business, I would contact this developer and say, I want my business to have the most Pokemon possible. So I would get everybody coming to my business to collect their Pokemon.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, iPhones and Droids are the, you know, the thing that it's being used on, but mm-hmm. Pokemon is a Nintendo property, right?
Yeah.
So is this mean that Nintendo is now going to reach out beyond their game system, their hardware, and say, okay, we relent, and now we're going to have these characters and place them onto other platforms?
Well, if they were smart, they would have already started that process. And you know what? I don't know who the web developer or the app developer is for it. It's got to be Nintendo-based.
It has to. I mean, it couldn't get a license to do this.
Right. Nintendo would be suing the pants off of you.
So, you know, they have a version of this. They've had it for a long time called Ingress from Google. Google has the deal. And you get on a team and you battle against one team or another to open portals and gates. And they have meetups and all sorts of stuff. And it's all geo-based type gaming, same sort of thing.
Well, have you ever done legitimate geocaching?
Yes, I did before I had an iPhone, as a matter of fact.
It's still a thing. Like, you can still do it. And for folks who don't know, geocaching is where you wander around even your own neighborhood and find these little treasures that people have hidden. And they leave specific clues or coordinates, and you go find the treasure. And then you hide and leave your own treasure for someone else to find, correct?
That's essentially it. And they usually are kind of – sometimes they're really small, and it's just a little scrap of paper, and you, like, sign your name. But
right.
In some
so it's a little, like a yearbook kind of thing where you kind of sign in that you were there, right?
Yeah. And then some are like legitimate boxes filled with cool things like, you know, I don't know, coins and money and
I was going to say the one I saw was like a little Altoid tin and it had, you know, some gum and some whatever. And I get it that you're not supposed to take candy from a stranger, but it was a geocache thing. So it was a nerdy stranger that I don't think was going to put razor blades in their chewing gum.
Right. Yeah, I haven't. I geocached for about 2 weeks, and then I was like, okay, that was fun.
The bloom fell off the rose, huh?
It did, and I had a big old handheld GPS that only gave you your numbers. It didn't.
Remember those?
Yeah. You know, now we take for granted. Can you even put real coordinates in your iPhone? I wonder. I bet you could.
Oh, I'm sure there's an app for that.
I know that I've seen there's a geocaching app for the iPhone.
So Pokemon is electronic geocaching with little critters that don't really exist.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm sure it's not going to go away anytime soon. So just deal with it.
Yeah. I don't know.
What are we going to talk about today, Jed?
What are we going to talk about? Well, we're talking about what we did the last 6 months. And then we have some questions that we have completely stolen from the internets. But we'll tell you. Slate.com has a Dear Prudence column, so we have a question from there. And we're also going to give our own advice to a letter that Dan Savage had been fielding, and he has an answer. But you can read his answer online or listen to it. But we'll read the question and give our own version of an interpretation.
Yeah, when we get into that segment, I will give the background on why we wanted to do it and what we're doing exactly and where people can go to find what the legitimate, real advice-giving counselors had to say and not just our clink, clink, 2 cents that we're going to throw in.
Yep. And then we're going to talk a little bit about fitness because it's been quite the thing for both of us. And things are happening pretty cool in that particular area.
Sure.
So, let's see. Well, so what happened in the last 6 months? Anything crazy going on good?
Yes, the last 6 months for me have been great. And I will save the fitness part of that till we get to that segment.
Right.
But surviving all of the election stuff and all the Facebooking nonsense that is election season.
I can't hear you.
Ultimately, enjoying the last 6 months of dialogue with my teenager, who, although he's not old enough to vote in November, has had nothing but opinions to spew about everything. And a lot of things we agree on and a lot of things we don't. So that's been a fun evolution and watching your young adult folks in your life become more adult and deal with what are adult issues. So that's been great. I mean, I don't have anything terribly exciting as far as, you know, sadly, I only just work and I only do my regular 9-to-9 job. don't necessarily call it a 9 to 5. Wow. Sometimes it's a 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. job. And traveling a little less than I had been, which is why I'm looking forward to more podcasting with you. But other than that, you know, life is pretty good. What about you? What are you doing?
Man, school. Was I going to school when we started this podcast? Man. So I have 3 classes left, and I'll have a master's degree.
We'll have a master's. That's awesome.
I know. It's real exciting. And so I'm on the second week, or let's see. No, third week. This is the third week of my one of 3 classes left. It's like practically almost it's a third done. It's only 8 weeks.
Yeah, you're in the home stretch. I mean, yeah. 3 classes left is nothing considering what you've got under your belt already.
And really, I only have 1 more class after this that's a class.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like global studies or some international thing. And then after that's a capstone, which isn't really like a class. It's a put it all together thing.
Okay.
So it is a class, but it's not the same sort of event. It's okay. It's a little different. I guess it's a class, but yeah.
It's another requirement. And then you're
done. And then you're done.
You wear the mortar hat and you go walk down the aisle.
That's the plan.
All right.
And so it's interesting. I just thought about this. So my last class ends at the end of February.
Oh, okay.
Which I believe there's an event that is coming up.
I was going to say, is it going to be that same weekend?
It could be that same weekend, but I'll just do my homework early.
All right. And, well, you're a student. You get your stuff done.
I will get my stuff. I'll figure it out. Whatever I have to do, I will get it figured out.
I love it. Well, so let's talk about this a little bit, because you've had to develop your studiousness again, which takes a little effort, right? Like you went to school a long time ago and right. then you started working and were a regular grown up, and then getting back into school mode required you to kind of become a little more disciplined or thorough, and you've done well so far. You've got straight A's. I mean, how did you do that and keep up?
I have no idea.
Was it a lot of late nights? Are you a procrastinator?
Totally a procrastinator.
Okay.
But the truth is that sometimes I'm a 6-hour Sunday marathon session start at 6 o'clock, and my head is hitting the desk at 11:59 going, oh my God, I got to get this in, and hit the button and boom, submit 11:59, and I'm getting good grades. So
I'm going to recommend to you, you go to a website at some point called Wait. It's called Wait, But Why. And it's about this guy who gave a really great, well-received viral TED Talk about procrastination and the monkey that's in your brain that kind of keeps you from doing things. And then the absolute, oh my gosh, you know, the thing, the stress and the terror that makes you finally get out of your own way to get your stuff done. And he's just really great. He does all kinds of stuff, and I think you'd like it. So, yeah.
Like today would be a great day for me to be doing homework.
Right.
But I just did it yesterday, so I want a break from that bullshit. But the horrible part about that is that tomorrow is, many of my Tuesdays or Thursdays are Toastmaster Day. And Wednesday I have running club. And so I fill my week with stuff. And then Friday, I could do stuff Friday, but it's Friday.
Yeah, you don't want to do anything Friday.
No one wants to do anything Friday. And I have to get a discussion done. So I get a discussion done by Thursday, which is required in all the classes. So somehow I figure out how to get it done, and it gets done. That initial discussion post. And then I got Friday, Saturday to work on stuff. And, you know, and Disney's calling, and Runs in the Morning are calling, and all the other things are calling, you know? So I'm like, I got to go do that. And then finally it's, you know, 9 o'clock on a Sunday night going, oh damn, I got to get the homework done. And yeah.
Yeah. It creates a little bit of you have to get your productivity stuff in line, right? And figure out what you're going to allot your time doing.
Yeah.
Now, do you wish you could get back But you're not a big TV person. Like, you're really just busy doing stuff.
Yeah. I watch in the morning, I watch about 15 minutes of Reuters news.
Right.
And that's about it.
Okay.
And I'm watching, I finished Orange is the New Black.
Okay.
You didn't like that show.
I haven't watched it since season two. Oh. I know everybody loves it. And I loved it until I didn't love it anymore.
Oh, well.
So I hear it's great again and still. And it just made me sad. I couldn't watch it.
Oh, it was scary. This season was scary.
And all the subject matter is so dark. And you know what I'll say about this is that I couldn't find anything redeeming about any of the characters when I kind of fell off the wagon the end of season two.
Hmm.
So it didn't compel me to come back for more because I just couldn't like them. And conversely, with House of Cards, there is nothing likable about Frank Underwood, right? And he's so maniacal and Machiavellian and all of those things, but I'm rooting for him and I want him to do whatever it is he's going to do. So I don't know why I like his evilness in his show, House of Cards, versus, you know, these women in Orange is the New Black. I guess I'm just a misogynist at heart.
Mm. So there's a show, which I don't know if you've seen it on Netflix, called Hinterland.
No.
So it's kind of a British show on kind of it is. And it's a murder investigation.
Okay.
So, but it's a show. It's very interesting. So, you know, you got to pay attention.
Oh yeah. See, sometimes I don't need a lot of thought-provoking stuff either.
Yeah. Like I have to say with Orange is the New Black, I never felt I have to pay attention to that show. I kind of know.
Waiting for the lesbian parts, aren't you? Let's be honest. I mean, we're waiting for just the lesbian part.
Hey, and you know, I am in love with those girls.
I agree.
It's just like the one guy says. He said, "Piper, don't be gay for the stay."
It's hard to do when you're in prison. Trust me.
I'm telling you, there's stuff happening in that show. It's like, holy smokes!
All right, well then let me let me re-intro myself or re-update myself, because the other thing I'm trying to do, Jed, is I'm trying to become a minimalist.
Okay.
And I told you about this briefly when you visited.
Yeah.
That minimalism is like this movement taking place, and it, you know, can be considered maybe an offshoot of the tiny house revolution or whatever this craziness is, where we're overconsumed and ready to kind of purge some of that stuff. So I'm trying to be a minimalist in all things. So now I'm being more successful at it in some departments of my life than others, like shoes. I don't want to only have two pairs of shoes. I'm going to have every kind of shoe that I want. But
what?
I know. I'm a choosy minimalist, okay? Uh-huh. But like crap in my garage or decorations or old, just whatever, stuff that's going to get moved out and moved on and not left for my family members to deal with. So I don't have any we've just cleared out a lot of stuff. So minimalism has been on my radar screen for a while, and I've been purging in many areas, just not my shoes.
Hmm. So, wow. Yeah.
So here's my handy tip for the week for the minimalists out there listening.
Yeah.
And this one is so great. Every time you take, you live in a condo complex, right, where you take your trash cans out to the curb, or do you have a community?
We have a big dumpster. And
All right. We have to take our trash cans out to the curb once a week, right, so the city trucks can come. Uh-huh. So the tip was, every time you take your trash can to the curb, whatever room is left in it, fill it up with crap that you want to get rid of out of your house. And that was brilliant. Today, I put two bags of stuff in there that wasn't donatable and wasn't, you know, nothing that needed to be shredded or any of that stuff. And it felt so good. So every time I get rid of, you know, 40 pounds of crap, I just get so elated. I'm very happy.
Hmm. I struggle with the minimalist thing. You know where the hard one is?
Uh-huh.
And this is the dumbest thing ever. It is t-shirts. Especially when you run the races that I run. It's like, do I want to get rid of that t-shirt from that race? Oh, do I want to keep or give rid of?
Okay, at any one given time, how many shirts can you wear?
at any one given time? You can only wear one, obviously. Right.
And how many days in the week are there?
Seven.
So you need seven t-shirts.
But I could go 14 days without being able to do my laundry.
No, you need to do laundry every third day.
What? I don't even own a washer dryer. I have to go to the laundromat. That's why, you know, if, you know, bad day happens and I just say procrastination and then all of a sudden I got to go another 3-4 days before I can get laundry done.
Well, that would be insane, but I understand because you have to share communal laundry. But do you also have a t-shirt drawer that is so full that oftentimes your shirts will sit in the laundry basket clean?
Yes.
And not put away because you have room in that drawer. And so the lack of room in that drawer is stopping you from putting those shirts away.
I know.
So there are those websites to send your shirts off to have a quilt or a blanket made out of them.
Uh-huh.
Or take a picture of you wearing them all and put it in your, you know, photo stream. And then you're done with it. And let the shirt be passed on. It's hard. The sentimentality of things is really, really hard. But the things that are sentimental that I've ended up donating or moving out of my house, I've taken a picture of and dumped it. And sometimes I feel really bad about it, but yet I know when I don't have to move that crap again, I am really more happy.
Have you cried?
Yes, I've cried. There were kids' things and all that, you know. But how many little things do you need? Like, because everything is so easy to get now, we get so many things. And then we keep so many things, but we still get so many things, new things. So it's just a vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I've been accused of being heartless and callous, but I'm not going to be cluttered.
Well, I admire your ability to be able to disconnect, disassociate yourself with, you know, inanimate objects that...
Well, and here's the hard part, because I live with other people, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes my desire to declutter and their desire to keep their shit comes to odds, right? So I've really... I've tried to just do my own stuff. So, and let everybody else choose what they're going to do with their other things.
My ex was that way when I first met her. She was very minimalist in that way.
Yeah.
She didn't have a lot of stuff. And then
everything I own to be able to fit into a Volkswagen Beetle. I don't ever want more stuff than that.
Really?
Yeah. So
that does not include furniture though. That's just personal. Well,
correct. Personal things like, you know, it's that whole story of if your house was on fire, what would you take with you? Right. I don't want to have a lot of things that I have to get.
Your phone.
Right. Make sure I'm wearing a bra, grab the cell phone and go. Right. That's all.
Really? That's a requirement.
Well, if the firemen are going to come over, I don't want to be braless in front of the firemen.
I thought all you ladies were in that whole, you know, free the top thing going on.
Yeah, protest. It's not that comfortable to be free.
No.
If you don't pass the pencil test.
Hmm. You mean, I see. Was what the pencil test is if you can hold the pencil?
If you can hold the pencil, you need to wear a bra.
Ah.
Okay. So,
let me try that test right now. Nope. Pencil does not stay.
So there you go. You can be bra free.
I can be bra free. Okay. So, well, we'll talk about that in our last segment, I guess. Or is that upcoming?
Sure, whatever. What else is next?
Okay. Should we move on to the actual segments here? Because we're only 25 minutes into this podcast.
Oh, we said we were going to do 30 minutes. We're so terrible.
No, I thought 45 for this initial.
45 for the first one back. Yeah. That's right. That's right. All right. We'll talk fast.
All right. So let's move into – let's do the fitness one, and then we'll end up with the questions. How's
okay.
That?
Sounds good.
So big to-do is fitness. And both Teresa and myself have been in fitness pretty much since we met. It's kind of – we were friends on Facebook, and then all of a sudden, we were both using the Nike Plus app, or the Nike app, and mm-hmm. we were challenging each other, and we kind of got hooked in with that, and we've ran a couple of races together. We ran the Susan G. Komen 5K at Dodger Stadium in California, let's see, and we've ran the Tinkerbell Half Marathon, and did we do anything else? Or are those the only ones?
I think those are the only structured races, but we've always had Fit competitions, and we've always had, you know, a healthy camaraderie and challenge when it comes to what are you running, what are you doing, you know, that kind of thing.
So we are, right now we're doing a big Fitbit challenge. So if you want, if you have a Fitbit and you want to get into our weekly or weekend challenges, hit us up if you got a Fitbit, and we'll add you as a friend and put you on for Fitbit challenges, which are fun because we have now about what, there's like 8 or 10 people in that challenge?
Exactly. And some of them are damn good steppers.
I'm mad. I'm getting ready to get out there and kick their butt.
So I will share with you, up until this weekend, I kept saying out loud, I can't get 20,000 steps in a day. There's no way I can get, you know, I try and I try. And I did it 2 days in a row this weekend because I was so motivated to try to win this challenge in a fun way, right? Like, you know, and it made me get up and do this horrible hike that we have nearby that I hate doing, but it's good for you to do, right? That Claremont Wilderness Loop. Yeah. It's 5 miles of sheer death march. But once you're done, you can feel really accomplished. And by the time you get it all wrapped up and all this back to your car and the rest of the weekend, it easily got me to 20,000 steps per day. So I'm like, damn it, I hate when I find a solution to my dilemmas. And that definitely is the solution to my dilemma.
Well, was it Sunday? You guys got up and then all of a sudden you probably all saw, holy shit, what did Judd do?
Yeah, you did like 13,000 at a time too. What were you
doing? So I ran Cocoa Beach. I ran the beach from Cocoa Beach to Cape Canaveral, 6 miles round trip.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, fuck y'all. Here's some steps for you.
Yeah. And then you got wiped up by Joe F.
Whoever that is. I don't even know who he is.
Yeah. And that's the fun thing about Fitbit Challenge.
Do you know who he is?
No, he's a friend of Angelina's. So, okay. Yeah. I think he's either current or a vet.
Okay.
Military friend of hers. Uh-huh. So I really love that interaction, and I love the, you know, the fact that somebody could always be stepping and you think you've done your allotment for the day or you're number one and nope, there's always somebody on your tail, which is great.
And I'm waiting for Mindy to kick in and kick all our asses because, you know, she's like a 4-time or 8-time marathon runner.
Yep. Anybody could win these things. That's the beauty of it.
I'm going to message her tonight. That's what I should do. Send her a message tonight. Tell her about what we're doing here tomorrow. And see if I don't think she'll do it. I don't think she'll do it because she's got a newborn.
Yeah.
But you never know. She has the bug.
That's right. Doesn't hurt to ask people.
Never know.
So you're running. In fact, you're president of the Coast Runners Association. Like, what are you doing?
No, I'm not president. I'm just a little guy in a big pond. I'm just on the board. I'm a volunteer with the Space Coast Runners out here.
But you're coordinating the big Space Coast.
No. I'm actually getting ready to coordinate a run for the Navy League.
Okay. Yeah. That's a big deal. That's not just, you know.
Yeah. So, but I'm working all sorts of things to try to make this like a super run. So, right, we're hoping to get 400 people. That's what we're hoping.
That would be amazing.
But people tell me that some people think that this is going to be big. They think that the promotion ability of this will, people just won't like the, they like the location and they like the cause. So then it just may bring people out that just want to come out just to support it.
Well, this is the first annual. So by the time you do it again next year, you'll probably double your entries, you know, if it goes well.
Well, we're going to, I have this really neat, niche-y thing from a military perspective to give out because, you know, a lot of races now give out finisher medals.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm thinking no on the finisher medals.
Okay.
I got something better.
What's your better?
Challenge coins, military challenge coins.
Oh, that's a thing that's internal to the military.
Well, yeah, but a lot of people give them out now, these coins. And so they'll be like really cool Navy League challenge coins.
Okay. Is it like my AA chip or is it my...
Yeah, exactly. You flip it up there on the bar and go...
That's right. When you show your chip at the bar, you drink for free all night, right?
That's it. You know, everyone has to have their challenge coin. And that's...
Okay, you know what we should talk about? I don't mean to take us off the running thing, but I've lost today ish, 35 pounds. Can't you tell on my voice?
Yeah.
And you've lost how much?
20 pounds.
Now,
and keeping it off.
We have a little differing style, but we're sort of doing the same thing. You think your thing's better.
That's right. We all think our things are better. That's how it is.
I think my thing's better. But your thing is you saw the movie Forks Over Knives, and you were really influenced positively by a plant-based protein-rich diet, correct?
A plant-based whole foods diet.
Whole foods diet.
So I don't eat shitty foods. Like, I don't drink Coca-Cola, anything that has all sorts of chemicals in it. That's what I avoid. And then, of course, plant-based. Now, I'm not 100% plant-based, but I'm about 80%. I eat chicken and fish on occasion or something like that.
And this is great to hear you say, because you did exactly the right thing. Like, you didn't just say, I can't eat meat or I can't eat. You just said, I don't eat crap and I don't eat this or chemicals. So when you're a dieter, right, you get stuck into the can'ts and the couldn'ts and the I don't get or whatever.
Right.
But you just said, I just choose not to eat these things, right?
Right.
Which is brilliant mindset to have. So
it was a lifestyle change. It was not a diet. It's so, and that's why I feel it's a sustainable thing, because I can quote unquote fall off the wagon if I want, and I just get right back on. You know, I can have that, you know, I just want to eat the piece of cake. So fuck it. I'm eating the piece of cake. And I do.
Because 99% of the time you're good or you're better about food choices. And so when you have a piece of cake, you're not going to die.
No, it doesn't ruin the diet, because it's not a diet. It's a lifestyle choice change. And, but I mean, I guess I'm used to it, because being, I don't eat shellfish or pork for religious reasons. And, so I've already been enjoying a lifestyle diet restriction. So already doing it was just another way and thing that I'm doing. I'm just saying, okay, well, that's it.
And you've had great medical success, right? Like, you know, some numbers that weren't super great in blood tests.
Oh, I don't know yet. I need to go get that checked. It's been six months and I need to check
it. You do, and then come back and report that you have, because I can just see it, right? Like, you've slimmed down and you look great and you're so fit. So obviously your numbers are going to be good.
I'm hoping. Either that or I'm going to drop dead and... you know how that goes. It's
like, what was that? Jim Fix, the first marathoner who wrote The Joy of Running or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Broke and died during a jog. So, yeah, there's always those options. I'm doing a similar thing. Low carb, high protein. So definitely not as much plant influence as what you have. But sustainable and livable for the most part, with the exception of I don't get a lot of my red wine that I love so much, but I'm trying to limit some of those extraneous drinkable carbs.
See, on my diet, beer and wine are totally on the diet.
Beer and wine. Oh, good for you. All right. Maybe I'll be swayed.
I had a beer tonight, as a matter of fact.
Good for you.
Florida Beer Company.
But I do know that it has affected my numbers. Obviously, I've lost weight, which is a bonus, but I've gotten cholesterol way down and all of the ugly things that people are like, well, you might need this drug. I definitely am working towards keeping it not medicated for me. So,
isn't that the key? Is we just want to be off medications?
I don't want to take anything, and I like how I feel. Right, more energy, and you know, I mean, do I hate sometimes avoiding some of the foods, the junk foods? Because I'm a real fan of junk food and chemicals and processing and flavor crystals and all of those things. I love all that crap.
And you sell it.
And I sell it for a living, exactly. So I try to not tell people about that. So anyway, that's been our fitness life, and it's helped to whittle off a few pounds to make all this impact a little bit easier.
And to keep us motivated in the direction of travel, of continuing to exercise and run tomorrow, which when you hear this podcast, it will already be passed most likely. We are signing up for a big race here in Orlando, Florida.
I get to go to Florida in February, which is the only time to go, I think, because not during the summer, right? It'll be nice there during winter. And we're going to run the Tinkerbell half marathon.
No, Princess.
Oh, Princess. Oh, it's all princesses.
Yes.
Here. I am not wearing a tutu. I'm just telling you that right now.
No tutu? No, nothing?
No, I don't do costumes. I don't think so.
Costumes? Really?
All right, it's up for negotiation.
Is it negotiable potentially?
In fact, here we go. Okay. You know what I'm going to make you do?
Oh, what?
Terrible. I'm such a glutton. All right, I do not want to wear a costume to run. Okay. We've had this discussion many times.
Uh-huh.
But I was just thinking today, my birthday is in a couple weeks, in October, right?
Two months.
And I want to lose 15 more pounds before my birthday.
Oh,
and wow. I should dare myself to lose that 15 pounds. And if I don't, then you can choose whatever costume you want to put me in to run that stupid race.
I love it. I'm in. So what if you get your 15 pounds?
And if I get it, then I don't have to wear the costume. That's the only costume. And that's fine. That would be enough of a prize for me.
Really? That's enough?
Because I know you. I know you're going to come up with some crazy tiara-filled, sparkly, pixie dust covered.
No, I'm going to make you go as Minnie Mouse.
Oh, nothing would make me more miserable. So this is a huge incentive for me to get these last few LBs off.
Uh-huh. So it's Minnie Mouse. There you go.
Okay, it's Minnie Mouse racing costume, or I'm down the 15. All right, tomorrow morning.
And I'm going online tonight to start looking for Minnie Mouse costumes for you.
That would be a good incentive. If you text me a Minnie Mouse costume,
I'm going to be posting them online.
Okay.
I'm going to tag you. I'm going to go, Teresa, what do you think of this particular outfit?
All right. This is great. This is a good carrot at the end of my stick, because I've been like, oh, I need, you know, I would need to make it a game, right?
All right.
So knowing that I don't want to look like Minnie Mouse during the Princess Half Marathon, I will hope, even if I have to wire my jaw shut, I'll get through this.
You're going to have to, confide in me what your starting number is.
I'll text you a picture of the scale tomorrow morning.
Okay. All right.
And where I need to be, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. So your birthday in October. So you have like 3 months practically, right?
Hey, it shouldn't be that hard, but
right?
It's been a little bit hard the last couple of weeks, so.
I know what you're gonna pull one of those marathons prior to the weigh-in thing where you lose 5 pounds. Do you do that when you run?
No, in fact, exercise bloats me up.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. After this weekend, I was up a little bit. And you'd think, okay, I walked 45,000 steps all weekend. How do you gain weight, right? I absolutely weighed more today, a few ounces, than I had on Friday, which is so frustrating. But other events, like the 21 miler I did, I think I gained 9 pounds after that weekend.
Really?
It's all water and retention and lactic acid and grief and pizza.
Grief. That's a whole nother thing. But when I ran this weekend and I finished after 6 miles, I was down 4 pounds.
Yeah, see, that doesn't happen to me ever.
I was like 146 on the scale. And I was like, And then, of course, I ate and drank and everything, and I was back up to 149.
So it's just fluid, right? And that's why I felt like, okay, I didn't really gain this weekend. That was one of my better ones. But I've had weekends of very great physical activity, and then you come back weighing so much more, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah. So, anyways, everybody's invited to come out and run the Princess Race if you can get in. Hopefully, we'll get this online soon enough. But we know it sells out, like, instantly.
Right.
But I know there's things like team and training, and there's some other ways to get entries into the Princess Run. So for people that want to do that.
All right.
So let's move on. We've got about, looks to me like 5 to 10 minutes left in this podcast.
We'll do this as quickly as we can.
but we'll just do it. And if it goes more than 45 minutes, whatever. It's our fucking podcast. We can do what the fuck we want.
That's right. Exactly. They're not the boss. All right, so we decided, because I've mentioned it, I don't know, a dozen times, that we really like the idea of being advice columnists. Now, we do know and fully appreciate that we are not accredited psychotherapists. There's nothing about us that would deem us counselors. Our lives are no beacon of goodwill or good fortune or good planning or anything. We have nice lives, but you know what I'm saying, Jed. We aren't probably the best role models in the world.
Yeah.
So, but it certainly doesn't prohibit us from having opinions and wanting to share them. And so I'm a big fan of the Dear Prudence and the Dear Abbeys of the world, and of course our dear friend Dan Savage and his great con. So we thought we would choose a few letters, and then what we've decided to do, and this is the format, is that I sent Judd the letters and no responses, not what the actual paid for advice columnist replied. We've penned our own ideas about responses, and then we'll check and see what Dear Prudy or Dan Savage had to say about said problem, and then we'll see how close we were to what the quote-unquote experts say.
Okay.
Does that set it up pretty well for the listener? All right.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and read the first one, and then we'll banter, and you can read the Dan Savage one.
Sounds good to me.
Okay? All right.
Sounds great.
So here it is from Dear Prudy. It says, "When is it too late to change your mind? All of my life, I dreamed of becoming a doctor. It was the only career I ever considered. I had to fight hard to make the dream become reality because my family does not value education. They didn't support me in any way and actually told me that I would fail. I had to fight all through high school to get the right advanced classes. I got into good college only because I ignored counselors' suggestions that I go to a community college because it'd be easier. Well, I did well in pre-med program, did exceedingly well on the MCAT, got accepted into a respectable medical school. Here I am 2 years into the program, and I realize I hate it. It isn't the work or the pressure. I just don't want to be a doctor anymore. I'd quit if it weren't for the fact that I know my family would mock me for the rest of my life. Is it a good idea to keep on a career trajectory just to prove people wrong when they may have been right?"
Now, so let me ask you this. Were there expectations on you as to what you should be when you grow up?
Of course. You got to be a doctor or lawyer. It's the typical, stereotypical Jewish family values thing.
So you did hear that a lot.
I did hear that growing up.
Yeah, I didn't. Nobody had any plans for me.
No.
So that's why I'm secretly jealous of this questioner, because like at least your family had an opinion one way or the other. I mean, it's not positive, but they did have an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what are your thoughts about the doctor, Dr. No, I guess we'll call her, because she doesn't want to be a doctor anymore.
Dr. No. He or she.
He or she. I immediately identified as a woman.
See, I don't know why. Initially, I thought it was a woman, but then after reading it again, I gender nonspecific. But either way, my answer is change. If you don't like it, change. Especially something like that, because why be unhappy for the rest of your life doing something that you don't really love if that's not your passion? And it's not too late.
Every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, and hear your family go, "Oh, couldn't hack it as a doctor, huh?"
But here, let me caveat this. Have something. Have a plan. If you don't have a plan, stick with what your plan is. If you don't have a plan, I mean, if you have some idea, you go, "You know what? I want to be a whatever, a lawyer now," or whatever it is. Maybe you want to be an accountant. Doesn't matter. Just have a plan. Don't, like, give up and go, "Okay, I'm going to go back to the basement of my parents' place." That's no plan. But maybe you just need a break. Maybe you need a sabbatical from it. Take a break from school. Maybe you just don't realize that, you know? If it's possible to take a break and say, "I need a sabbatical. Let me have a semester off of medical school so I can get my head together and figure out if this is really what I want."
So your advice is good. I mean, I wouldn't dispute that, but I took it a different way. I thought, you know, this person started their plight to be a doctor with a huge chip on their shoulder. Right, towards their family. So it was the middle finger diploma awarding of, "You don't think I can do it, I'll show you." So I think underneath all that shows a lot of grit and determination from this person. So, okay, they've invested all this time and probably a ton of money and have a ton of things to pay back, that they should use this medical degree, but maybe in a different way than being a day-to-day doctor. Maybe it's doing something, whether it's teaching, medicine, going back to being an EMT, or maybe becoming a school nurse, or, you know, something like that, where they could use their powers for good. They're still in the medical field, and they don't have to deal with that day-to-day doctor stuff. That would be my thing. I just hate to see all of that time in education. I don't want to say it's wasted, but not be utilized.
Well, I don't know why what they're saying, if they don't want to be in the medical field or they just don't want to be a doctor.
Right. So, and I read it to be that they just didn't want to be a doctor.
Oh, because, I mean, yeah, you could be an RN. You know, the person could be a registered nurse, which does pretty well, especially with that level of education. They could probably be like an administrator type person at a hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole lot of things you could do.
A malpractice attorney consultant, you know, sure. Might be able to utilize that in a lot of ways that are different than the day-to-day practice of medicine. Yeah. All right. Do you want to hear what Dear Prudy had to say in response? All right. She answers, I'm not sure whether or not you should abandon your career trajectory because it's not very clear, based on your letter, what you think is wrong with it. If you're not overwhelmed by the worker pressure, I don't know why it's taking you this long to realize that you don't like the medical profession after so many years of familiarizing yourself with it. That's not to say that if you absolutely decide you can't stand the thought of becoming a doctor, you shouldn't allow yourself to change careers. Just that such a sudden and vague dislike of your previously cherished career path makes me wonder if there's not something else going on here. There's always something under the something, right? Your medical school should have a career counseling center. And I think you should make an appointment with a counselor and spend some time figuring out what it is that you want. It's possible you experience a crisis brought on by anxiety or desire to self-doubt. Botch says, you know, if your family would want to for the rest of your life or something like this, consider spending less time with your family. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. So we have the next letter.
So the next letter is a Dan Savage letter. And for folks who don't know Dan Savage, he is an internet columnist for The Stranger, correct? Which is a Seattle-based newspaper, online blog, website. And he offers sex advice. He's a sex-positive therapist, I guess is how you would describe him. So, all right. The letter states... My wife and I have been married for 14 years and in a committed, I assumed, relationship for 17 years. Sex between us, often kinky, has always been great. We have a wonderful life together and two perfect children. I thought we were good. Turns out things were too good to be true. I learned recently that my wife has been unfaithful to me throughout our marriage. She began an affair with an older man soon before we were married, and they were physically intimate for 5 years, including a bondage and master-sub relationship.
Wow.
You know, it's getting good. The physical sex stopped, but phone sex and online flirt continued up until I discovered this is a man I know. She has introduced him to our children. There's more. She also slept with another man, just once, with more bondage, but also flirted with him online and met up with him while at work. She slept with yet another man she was with, just once, in vanilla sex system. She had phone sex with at least two other men and flirted with more still on top. This came out because I was jealous about something that now seems minor and checked her email. Not proud of that. She's repentant and relieved that I finally know, and she promises that she will be faithful from now on. I'll always love her. Now stop laughing. I'll always love her, and I know she loves me. We had one session with a counselor and another is scheduled. Results were mixed. One thing that came out is that she has never been faithful to any romantic or sexual partner. I could forgive a one-time drunken fling, but this is a consistent pattern of infidelity that runs from the beginning of our marriage, and I had no idea. I can't process it. I thought she'd always been as loyal as I've been, which is to say completely. I can't put my wedding ring on. It feels like a lie. I have no one to talk to. For the sake of our future, the love that we still share and our children, we are committed to fixing things, but we're not sure. He signs it heartbroken and devastated. So what do you think? Does the marriage continue? Can he ever get over it? What do you think?
Oh, man. I know what Dan Savage would say.
Okay, well, what do you think Dan will say?
Well, you know, when anybody has a hidden extramarital affair, she's going to do it again.
Once a cheater, always a cheater?
Well, in this particular case, there's a complete pattern going on here. This isn't a one-time fling based upon being ignored and a whole bunch of, things that are relationship-based. This just seems to be a very sexual situation that she is not getting the sex at home, or possibly getting the sex at home that she's looking for. So I think she'd repress it for a while, but eventually would continue to pursue other things, or ask to pursue other things. And then the other thing is, what's in the guy's head? Can he really forgive her for all this, really? I mean, and then is it just stay together for the kids? So I would say if he's not happy about that situation, he's got to move the fuck on.
And he should get out. Now, if the shoes were reversed,
yeah,
and the ball gag was in the other mouth, and it was guy, all this extramarital affairs on the woman,
yeah,
and she was the one posing the question, what do you think would be the outcome there? What would you advise then?
Oh, she would blame the women that are trying to steal her man. That's the difference.
That could be true, but what I'm saying is, would you advise them differently to stay together or not, based on the gender?
I think that if you want something else, and you don't want to, and you keep it hidden, then, that's the whole thing. I know that it's weird in 2016, but. I know Dan Savage talks a lot about this because I've listened to his podcast and quite a few times, and he talks about people and open relationships. And this is clearly not the case of an open relationship. This is, cheating and broken hearts and all those kind of things. And I think if you can't handle that, then you got to, if you could give it a try to save it, but if you still can't get past it, time to move on, and hopefully you can move on as friends and kind of call it a day.
What do you think about his inability to see this happening 14 years? Like, what sort of denial did he really like living in?
Yeah, well, that's another question, right? Isn't it? Is he just really lying to Dan Savage by saying it's gone on that long under his nose without knowing about it?
Is that what's really got him mad? Is he just mad at himself for being sort of played a fool? Or is he really heartbroken about her extramarital relations? Like,
are the kids really his?
Well, and you would have a right to ask, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And the part where she introduced the kids to the dominant
lover,
that's a little tricky. I would have a little bit of a problem with that. Although the letter writer states that he knew the man as well, so it must be somebody in their circle of influence somewhere.
I think we don't have the full truth in that whole letter.
Well, I'm sure you only get it. Well, first of all, there's three sides, right? There's his side, there's her side, and then there's the truth somewhere in the middle.
Maybe that letter really should have started off, "I couldn't believe it until it happened to me."
Those are the good letters. Those are
letters. I know.
Right? Well, I won't dwell too much, and we'll go on to what Dan has to say.
Well, I want to know what you think about it.
Oh, two things. I think anything is possible. I think they absolutely could stay together, but I think he needs to figure out what part of him was broken in not being able to see that she was doing this for 17 years. Like, there is something for him to self-examine. Obviously, she needs to be remorseful and regretful, and she's going to have to be a very open book to him for a long time until she can reestablish or establish trust. And I think if they're both willing to look a little bit inward and be as open and raw with each other in their communication, they can save their marriage. I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be awkward for a while, and I do think they need more counseling. He said they'd had one. They should have more. But anything is possible. And when two people are committed enough to do it, great. And maybe he can let his guard down and decide that he wants to do some kinkier stuff with her. Maybe that's she really wanted to be spanked, and he didn't want to spank her, or whatever maybe, it is that she was into.
What she needs is someone to tell her that she can only have 3 peas and all the ice cream that she wants to eat.
3 peas? What does that mean?
It's from the movie Secretary.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that. Yes, where that was a dominant relationship, too.
Yeah, that's a great movie. So
it's a good movie if anyone wants a good,
naughty movie. Starring James Spader.
James Spader, yeah. Here's what Dan had to say.
Okay, here we go.
I'm going to preface my response with what someone in my position is expected to say, and what, given the circumstances, may even be true. Your marriage is over. Oh, well, there you go. The scale, duration, and psychological cruelty of your wife's betrayals may be too great for you to overcome. But you didn't need me to tell you that. You knew that already, so I can only assume you wrote wanting to hear something else. Oh, that's probably true. You don't need me to outline the reasons you should leave, and you don't need my permission to go. You wrote because you're looking for a reason to stay, so I'll give you a good shot. He says, a long-term relationship is a myth that two people create together. It's not chemistry, it's not math, it's not engineering. It's a story. A story we tell each other, a story we tell others, and a story we tell ourselves. And sometimes it's a story we have to revise. Right now, you feel like you've been telling yourself and others about your marriage, the story you've been saying is a lie. Not partly, but wholly. You thought your marriage was a loving, committed, and completely loyal one. But it's not, and it can't be, and it never was. Because she was cheating on you from the beginning. But loyalty isn't something we demonstrate with our genitals alone. Your wife wasn't loyal to you sexually, and that is painful. And the conventional wisdom is that people don't cheat on partners they love. But you were married to this woman, and you describe your marriage as a good, loving, and wonderful one. And somehow, it managed all those things despite wife's details. She must have been loyal to you in other ways. You would have divorced her long before you discovered these infidelities. Think back over the last 7 years. Every kind of loving gesture, every considerate action, every intimacy, and every moment you took care of each other. Was it all a lie? So finally, he goes on to say, he recommends a video or, excuse me, an author named Esther Perel. She wrote a book called Mating in Captivity. And she states in her experience that infidelity happens to everybody, but the marriage doesn't necessarily have to be doomed. So she suggests that they set their marriage over and consider what they had to give off, but a new marriage could start. And there's hope for them.
There you go.
So you were right, and I was right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I personally think that the end result there is going to be that. I don't know. He's writing Dan Savage, so it's not like he's writing Dear Abby this letter. So if you're writing Dan Savage, he's already open-minded to a certain degree. That's why I kind of wonder how. You must be holding something back.
Well, you don't believe in the validity of the writer. I think desperate people do desperate things, so I can understand writing to Dan Savage. I'd rather call into his show, though.
Call into his show?
Yeah.
That'd be cool. It'd be cool to see a show. He does it live every once in a while, right?
Yes, he does.
In Seattle on stage?
Yep. All right, well, that was our advice.
All right, well... Maybe we can, like, somehow go out there. I know that we have some other ideas for getting questions, because they're posed out on the internet.
Absolutely. Somehow. And if you want to write to us anonymously at tjtalks.com, feel free.
Yeah. I know we have some email address out there somewhere.
Twitter us, whatever.
Yep. Twitter. I think we have at tjtalks.com or something like that.
Yeah.
It's been a while. It's been 6 months. Damn it. We're back, though. We're back. So we talked about being back.
And fun.
But we did talk about things like Pokemon Go and all that crap. And running and exercise and then these wonderful questions here.
And our minimalism.
What else? It just seems like we're just trying to reintroduce ourselves once again.
It's Get to Know You Day here on TJ Talk.
Yeah. So next time we should have some, we will have a segment we are going to insert into the podcast. We're going to just sneak
cram
it in
it
there.
Right in, huh?
That's it. So all there'll right. be something exciting, something different that will come.
Oh,
in.
I know what I was going to ask you. We're doing yeah. this every 2 weeks. So is that bi-weekly or semi-weekly? I always forget that.
I don't know. What's the difference?
Bi-weekly would be twice a week. And semi-weekly is twice every other week?
No. What is it? Bi-weekly is every 2 weeks. Semi-weekly
okay,
is...
Bi-weekly podcast.
Yeah, I believe.
And semi-weekly would be twice a week.
I believe that is correct.
We do other things semi-weekly, but the podcast we're going to do bi-weekly.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good.
So, yeah.
Set your clock.
If it, yes. So... We didn't drink anything tonight.
No.
Sorry. It was totally drink free. Can't promise that'll happen next time.
God no.
All right, I guess I better wrap it up, right?
That's it.
All right. So for TJ Talks, I am Judd.
And I'm still Teresa.
And we will chat with you in 2 weeks.
Talk to you later.